I was reviewing on the previous tape the first Mishnah that we had about Masechus Brachos. Why did the sages say until Chatzos, until midnight, when the din is that it can be done all night long? So the answer is Kedei Laharchi Kodim Na'avira. They wanted to make sure that people wouldn't fall into a deep sleep and violate the commandment, you know, to recite the Shema Yisrael. So in order to keep them far, literally, from transgression, this is the reason why they said that. So we'll see a parallel to this in just a few moments, okay?
Like what's called a fence.
Yeah, a fence, exactly, right.
If
yes.
A person doesn't marry, but for some reason forgets to say Shema at night, so they say Shema in the marriage, would it count for reciting Shema, or Shema should be recited separately, like third time?
Recite the paragraphs of the Shema without any bracha in that case. I mean, it's the same business over here. We daven, let's say it's a little bit early, you know, it's Meinash Moshes or whatever it may be, but it's not quite, you know, the time when the stars appear in the sky, okay? So in that particular case, it's say the three paragraphs of the Shema later on, whenever you have a chance, okay? You can say it separately by itself, or you could do what I sometimes do, is to include it in the Krishna that we recite before going to bed at night, something else.
Do you say
Yomel Neman
too?
Yeah.
Say Yomel Neman.
Why not?
When you're alone, you say that.
Yeah. It's true that it sort of, you see, it takes the place of the word Omein. I mean, you realize that. When you say Krishna by yourself, definitely you should say Yomel Neman. Okay, so yes.
Onward.
So Zaklo, alright? It says this is the general rule. Anything where the fulfillment of the mitzvah is restricted to the daytime, it's kosher kolayom, right? It's kosher. It's valid all day long, and of course, likewise, anything which is at night, also,
sure.
Right. So the question is, do we leave anything out? So they say, what should have they have added if they wanted to? They didn't add it. They says, for example, they could have added Sidur Bozichin, Mesidik Bozichin. Okay? Now, we have to know what are Bozichin. The answer is, it goes back to the rule that in the Beis HaMikdash, or in the Mishkan to begin with, but they had a special table upon which they put 12 loaves of bread, 6 on one side, 6 on the other. They brought it on Shabbos, and then the following Shabbos it was removed and replaced with, it doesn't mean that they baked it on Shabbos, it had to be baked before Shabbos, okay? Don't get me wrong. But this is when they, you know, they took the old loaves out and they put in the new loaves, okay?
What they do with the bread? Did they give it
the
to
the Kohanim them? Ate it.
Right?
The Kohanim ate it.
Yeah, but did it get old because from Shabbos to Shabbos?
The Gemara tells us, and the miracle took place, that the bread was just as fresh at the end of the 7 days as it was when they
like
first put
the
it in.
Just like
in the desert,
40
Yeah, this is a
Gemara
and Chagiga mentions that, talking about it, right, okay? So, all right, so what could have been added? The bozichin. What is bozichin? It was like a spoonful of frankincense that the Kohen had to put near this, and it stayed all week, and then it had to be removed. Okay?
Maybe
so,
with a preservative powder in there. Who knows? You know that.
Well, I don't know. But this is one of the rules.
Yeah.
Okay? It's one of the rules. In that connection, the Torah says it has to be done, period. This was, you know, specifically something that the Queen had to do. Okay?
Do you know what frankincense is today?
It's
a
spice,
right?
Does it exist?
I'm sure it exists somewhere. I can't say.
Don't put it in chicken soup.
Right.
I really
well, I'll tell you, maybe you'll look it up in an encyclopedia and see what they have to say about it. Okay.
So,
this has to be done during the day of Shabbos, right? Rabbi Yossi, and this would be in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, the Tanya who taught in the Baraisa, or I don't know what the Saturday taught, Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Sivaik is Hayeshona Shachris, Mesida is Hachadosha Arvis. He says that in the morning they took away the old bread, okay, Shachris, and then Arvis, here Arvis doesn't mean at night. Even though we use the term today as the evening service, okay?
Yeah.
But Arvis over here means towards evening, oh. As it gets towards evening. So in other words, as it gets later in the day, they could do what? So according to Rabbi Yossi, they would put in the new breads in the special table over there. So he says, actually, it doesn't mean, according to Rabbi Yossi, that you had to wait until then. But what he says is, if by some chance the Kohanim didn't get around to doing it until that particular time, until later in the day, so he says, Ein Bechach Klum, doesn't make any big difference, okay?
What day did they do this?
Yeah.
Did they do this on Yom Shabbat
Friday
in the morning?
Yeah, exactly.
Shabbos or
that
Friday?
That is right, so right, right,
like
right.
That's when they put in the new bread?
They could put it in immediately if they wanted.
But
according to the Gemara, the Mishnah, really, is where we have a description of Nochus and so on. What they did is that you would have 12 Kohanim. Each one would bring, that is, six would bring in the loaf, right? Loaves.
And six would take it away.
And six would take it away, something like that.
There were 12 loaves, though, weren't there?
Shabbos or before Shabbos? I said it had to be baked before Shabbos.
Baked before Shabbos, but
put in the holders, or removed from the holders, and put it in on Shabbos itself.
So what,
right?
You're saying they removed the old bread. What happened to the old bread?
I said the Kohanim
ate it.
They ate it after the week.
If they brought it, and took it away.
Yeah, after
when
they took it away.
Take it away.
It was good all week.
It stayed there in the containers.
For one week it stayed there.
Right. Then they took it away.
Then they took it away, and that they ate it, right.
And the new bread
was put in the place.
Right.
Okay.
This bread was on the table itself. It wasn't.
On the table, they had a special holder. Very special holder. And in it, there was like grooves or something like that that could hold an individual loaf. So you had six on this side and six on this side. Because that'll be 12.
Was the 12? Because of the 12 tribes?
12 tribes, whatever. I mean, but anyway.
Do we derive a significance from that? Of course.
The significance is the very fact, you know, that take the right page.
Sorry, I'm late.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you went to Sydney Silver? Did they find? Okay.
You're talking significance of the bread.
Right. Yeah. I started to say bread is very significant because of the fact that in the Torah itself, they refer to bread as being mate lechem, literally the staff of bread. From this you get the English translation that they say, you know, that bread is the staff of life. Because if people had nothing else to eat, then at least they could survive on bread and water. That was the minimum requirement for food, okay? So it's important. And I don't have to tell you that the Torah speaks in praise, you know, of bread. 104th Psalm speaks about, you know, people on the Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. I mean, this is where we have the, you know, the phrase, you know, that became the words that we use in the bracha itself for bread. And we
pas
don't, you
lechem.
Know.
Huh? Pas lechem.
Pas lechem is like a loaf of bread.
Oh, I thought it was a piece of bread, no?
Well, technically it really means more like a loaf of bread.
A loaf of bread.
Right. But you don't have a whole
loaf.
Loaf
is a whole
better
loaf.
A half a loaf in this case.
Better a
pot
of
it. And then no loaf. Okay.
No.
All right.
No, let's go.
So.
Let's go.
Now, so they ask an interesting question. They says, Amami Mikayim, and this is still part of the business, you know, as about Rabbi Yossi, says that even if they brought it in the morning, and for, if they took it away in the morning and then they first brought it later in the day, it's still valid. It doesn't have to be done simultaneously. That's what he's saying, right? So, Ma'ani Mikam said, then how do I fulfill where the Torah says that the bread has to be Lifnei Hashem Tamid, before the Lord, always? Always would imply what? That both the bread which is removed, they all have
the
to be
time.
There, and not even a moment,
right.
You
right.
know, should elapse between
right.
the old and the new,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So he explains what it means is simply shelo yeheh shulchan b'leilechem, that the table, you know, the gold table, should never be without bread
overnight.
Yeah,
for anything.
But it's a matter, you know, of a few hours or something, but it means that during the day, no day should pass without there being these loaves of bread. Okay. That's what he's saying.
Same loaves were there all week, right?
Yes.
They took them away, and they were with it.
We mentioned that before he came. Right. Okay. All right. Now, we said about things during the day, that if the mitzvah is during the day, it's kosher kol hayom. Same thing now, the Mishnah concludes by saying, dovish mitzvosi b'laylo kosher halayla, right?
Uh-huh.
Something where the mitzvah of this is at night, then all night long is okay for it. So the question is, we mentioned, if you remember, about the cutting of the omer, right? And we mentioned the fact that the sfiras omer has to be at night. Okay, and we also mentioned about that they used to burn the leftover limbs and fats and everything else, you know, on the altar of the various sacrifices. So what was left out? So they say Latsuye Bai, what should we add to the list? He says Latsuye, we should add to the list also Achilas Pesachim, the eating of the Paschal lamb. This of course was, you know, the night of Pesach. And the question is, according to this Mishnah, all night long would be valid for the eating of the Paschal lamb. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Can I just interrupt you just for a moment and ask you about a Sefira, because we actually do count during the day.
No, I have to tell you, the counting during the day is primarily for the benefit of those who might have forgotten to count at night.
But
at night you say it with a bracha, during the day you can't say it with a bracha.
Okay.
You drink ketchup.
Right.
But,
all right. So, udalo, but this does not follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the ruling of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Tanya, who learned the ochlus habosah b'layla hazeh. Pasuk says, and they are to eat this meat, you know, the Korban Pesach, on this night, right? Of course, it's a connection with the original one, you know, in Egypt, as they're getting ready.
Right.
Okay. So, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he says, Ne'emar kan b'layla hazeh, it's written over here, on this night, right? And you might think that it applies meaning all night long, but he says no, according to my interpretation, it only applies what? Only up to midnight. How do I know? Because for them out of Holland, then we have another pasuk in connection with the Exodus, where what does it say? It says we are God to be at the Tzayim v'layla hazeh, right? God says that I will pass through the land of Egypt on this night.
Right.
Okay? So we know, when did the Lord pass through Egypt? It was at midnight.
Yeah.
It was at midnight, right? Okay, it happened at midnight. So So mala halonat chatzos. So just as then, when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, passed through the land of Egypt, it was at midnight. So afkanat chatzos. So likewise, the eating of the Korban Pesach should only be up to midnight. Okay. So our practice, Taka, follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in this particular case, because in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, they tried to be finished by midnight with this. If it happened that it could go over, so then they have this Mishnah to rely upon that it would be kosher all night long. But it should be done before midnight. Okay, we don't have a Korban Pesach today, but what takes its place? The answer is the Afikoman. The Afikoman. So, again, what do we try to do with our Siddurim? We try to get to the eating of the Afikoman by midnight, if we can. Yeah. We try it. We try
it. Maybe
it happens. Of course, it doesn't always happen. But you try to do it. It represents the Korban Pesach, right? Because matzah we have. Okay, Moror we have, but we don't have Pesach. So what takes the place of Pesach? So the answer is the Afikoman takes its place today. Okay?
Again, as an aside, where did the tradition of hiding it, playing the game with it?
No, that already was done in order to keep the kids interested. Yeah, right. Yeah, that was it, essentially. Okay. Well, I'll just introduce the new Mishnah over here, because already it's a quarter to nine, and then next week we'll go full steam ahead, beginning the third chapter. Okay, Hadron Aloha Keinu Mafriya, we hope to come back to you again. Chapter 2, which is the one who reads the Megillah in an upside down fashion, remember?
What is that?
He reads
Hakoriya?
No. The second chapter is called Hakori Lamafreya, one who reads and not in the correct order. Remember, we learned. I mean, let's say you read chapter 3 before 2 or something, not reading in the right order, okay? And of course, that we do a parallel to Krishna. Krishna should also be said in the right order, okay? Yeah. All right. So Hadron Aloch means we hope to return to you, okay? And that's why they call every time that complete a, you make a siyum, so we call the, the last service, we call it the Hadron. Okay, yeah. All right. The new chapter begins by saying, Hakoris Hamigila Omeid V'Yoshin. Okay? First of all, it continues then with a discussion of the reading of the Megillah, and says a person could read the Megillah either standing or seated. Okay? Kira'a echad krohu shnayim yotzim. If one person reads it and then another person reads it together with him, we're not talking about one reads after another, but we're talking if at the same time, simultaneously, this one's reading, this one is reading. So nevertheless, in that particular case, they were yotzu, okay? Korayechel Kroshtaim yotzu. In other words, the people who were listening, if they could catch every word. It's a good question how they could do it.
Right.
I mean, if you hear two different, in general we have a principle which says, and this we learned when we learned Gemara Rosh Hashanah over there.
Right.
It said in Rosh Hashanah that two sounds cannot be heard simultaneously.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't mean it can't be heard, but it means you don't know what
you
would be right. You
can
make out what you're doing with it. Okay?
Like an echo.
I'm not talking about an echo. I'm talking of two guys are blowing shofar simultaneously. Okay?
One discredits the other.
Who are you listening to? You understand? It's confusing, needless to say. But nevertheless, actually, it would still be yotzei, although I wouldn't recommend it, okay? So likewise over here, I wouldn't recommend either that you have two people reading the Megillah at the same time, because it's much too distracting and you don't know really who you're listening to. But from a technical point of view, what the Mishnah is saying is that you have fulfilled the obligation if you hear it from two who are reading simultaneously. Okay, all right. And then the Mishnah has one more thing to say about the reading of the Megillah. Okay, and it says, "Mokem shenagu l'borech yivorech v'shalom l'borech lo yivorech." All right. So, what the Mishnah is saying at this particular point is that if you're in a location where the minhag is to make a bracha over the reading of the Megillah, okay, then you make a bracha. If you're in a place where the minhag is not to recite a bracha, then you don't make a bracha. This is what it seems like at the moment, at the surface, okay? But when we learn the Gemara, Birch Hashem, next week, so then we'll discover that this does not apply to the brachas that we recite before the reading of the Megillah. It only applies to a bracha that we have at the end of the reading of the Megillah, where we recite it, and the nusach comes from here, from the text of the bracha is here in the Gemara. But in some places they have the custom not to say it, for example, in the daytime.
Not here, don't say it in the daytime.
Oh, we say it in the daytime here.
Both?
Aravas are made up, something we say it.
Asha'heni,
we don't say it. That's a different story. It's a piyut. Yeah. Okay. But the bracha we say, definitely. Yeah. Right. All right, so at this point I'm going to stop because next week, Mirz Hashem, we'll do the rest of the Mishnah and we'll see that at this particular point they're going to go into the problem of the reading of the Torah. And now we're going to begin studying various dinim in connection with the reading of the Torah. Okay? So that is the new subject matter that will begin Mirz Hashem next week. Okay.
Doctor, I still have problems with the Sephira. Why again?
They didn't find out.
Okay, tonight is the what is it anyway?
31st.
31st. The 31st of July.
Right.
Where did the summer go? I know where it went. Too much heat.
Yeah.
Okay.
It didn't go anywhere. It's still here.
Yeah, true. But still, you can have a milder summer. More sharpest. Actually, North Israel, they have the same heat right now. It's been a very hot summer there.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, okay. We are now ready to start the third perek in Megillah. Perek that begins with the words, HaKorei Es HaMegillah. We already recorded the first part of the Mishnah, which speaks about the reading of the Megillah, and we said, first of all, the Mishnah said, HaKorei Es HaMegillah Omed V'Yoshev, which means that it's permissible to read the Megillah either standing
or sitting.
Okay. And then it says, Kra Echot, the Kra Vishnayim Yotzim. And then it says, if one person read the Megillah, or even if two people read it simultaneously, this is what we have to understand. It doesn't mean one after another, but
together,
it means that together, at the same time, they were reading it. So if the congregation listens, then Yotzim, then people have fulfilled their obligation of hearing the reading of the Megillah. Then the third thing they have to say about the reading of the Megillah, it said, Bokem shenagu l'vorech yivorech, shenon l'vorech lo yivorech, which means that in a place where the custom is, it's a minhag, to recite the bracha, so you recite the bracha. And where the custom is not to recite the bracha, then you don't recite the bracha. Well, we're going to learn in a few minutes that this machlokes only in reference to the bracha that follows the reading of the Megillah. But as we will learn, the three brachas that precede the reading of the Megillah, this is an obligation. This we have to do. It's part of the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, and so therefore the first of the brachas begins with the words Asher Kedishonu Mitzvoso, right? Praise God who commanded us, who made us holy with his commandments, and commanded us al mikra Megillah, concerning the reading of the Megillah. And as you know, whenever we're about to perform one of the mitzvahs that the Torah tells us to perform, then the usual nusach, the usual formulation of the bracha is Asher Kedishonu Mitzvoso, Tzivanu, and then you complete it, you know, with what particular mitzvah is. Yes.
Why does the Mishnah say that? Why would two people read the Megillah out loud together?
It's a good question. However, the answer
is going to be given. People? Why do you only say two, three, four, five?
Some people thought it was more festive.
Festive.
More festive, right, to have a couple of people do it at the same time.
At the same time.
But I don't have to tell you from my point of view. It's very confusing.
What happens if they're not in sync? Obviously.
No, you're right. All right. When we get to the discussion. You're right. When we get to the discussion of the Mishnah, you know, how they interpret the Mishnah, so then we'll have a chance to go into that question again.
Must be a point, though, that the Torah, that's why they say, since you can read sitting down, that the Torah stands.
No, I can't. No. All right, now we come to...
Deviation.
Right, now we come exactly to that part. As I said last week, now the chapter in Prior Lodge is going to be dealing with laws for the reading of the Torah. And this is what the Mishnah now continues by telling us. First of all, it tells us, Basheni v'chamishi b'Shabbos, which means on Monday and Thursday during the week. Shabbos over here is like saying week, okay? Because remember that whenever we count the various days of the week, you know, we don't have a word which means Sunday, we don't have a word which means Monday or Tuesday, or anything like that, and so on this. It's
first day,
right, it's Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, etc., etc. And then, of course, the psalm that we recite every morning, you know, each morning we recite a different psalm based upon what was the practice in the Beis HaMikdash when the Levites would recite these psalms, these different psalms. So we say, for example, Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Revi'i B'Shabbos, Hayom Chamishi B'Shabbos, okay? Just on Shabbos itself we say Hayom Shabbos Kodesh, okay? So, therefore, this is how we have to understand. Basheni v'chamishi b'Shabbos, it means on Monday and Thursday during the week. So, also, the next one we have to say is b'mincha, also, let me rephrase it. Let's read it as follows. Basheni v'chamishi on Monday and on Thursday, and then also b'Shabbos b'mincha. This is really the way I should have punctuated. No, there's no punctuation over here, okay? So that's why I apologize to the formulator of the Mishnah, because frankly it could have been read the way I interpreted it too, you know. But okay, but obviously this means B'Shabbos B'Mincha. And Shabbos in the afternoon, you know, the Mincha services, Korin Shlosha. At that time, literally three people read. Now why does it say read? Because originally, each person who got an aliyah actually had to read his own verses. Okay? This was the custom. As a matter of fact, according to Ezra Ra'anan, among many of the Temanim, you know, the Yemenite Jews, they still have this custom that whoever gets up to read on Shabbos, for example, he reads his own particular section. Well, obviously, then they have to really know their text very, very well in order to be able to do it. Okay, well, this is the reason why we have our custom, and the Gemara will affirm the same thing. This is why we have, you know, somebody who reads on their behalf. All right, that being the case, however, I have to tell you right now, a person who gets an aliyah, first of all, he has to know where we start reading, and he has to know where we stop reading. Okay, that's number one. Number two, it's not right, after having made the bracha and the Balkriya begins reading, for him to turn around, to talk. He should actually be following and saying in an undertone to himself, right,
the words
that, you know, the Balkriya is saying aloud. Okay? This is the correct procedure of what they should be.
But it doesn't happen that way, because many people couldn't even see this for themselves.
Well, this is why, for example, we use a pointer in order to show exactly what word are we reading, and the person who has the aliyah could, but what he hears, how the word should be said, right?
Exactly.
About
authority, yeah. It's low enough and loud
right.
enough, he could repeat
yeah,
it.
Obviously. I mean, there are Balakriya, you know, who they
know
pride themselves on how fast they can get
yeah.
through a reading of the Torah.
Are there many Orthodox synagogues that follow that you know of?
What?
Not around here, I don't
think. Theoretically, they all should follow it.
Lubavitcher
I say theoretically, okay.
Lubavitcher do it. They read at the Jewish nursing home where I when I read Lubavitcher Shabbos. When he reads the Torah, I am
Kosovsky.
He points to where you begin and where you finish. And he reads it loud enough, and so, that we follow. Yes.
Okay. At any rate,
that's
you know, yeah, correct. It bothers me, I mean, when I see people during the time that the reading of the Torah is taking place, they're busy talking, catching up on davening, stuff like that, both of which are wrong.
You know what people are you talking about? People that are up on the beam with you? Or
sometimes up on the beam and sometimes in the audience. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, since they have the Aliyah, they're on the beam, but you're
right.
referring to the general congregation as well.
General congregation, but sometimes people even who are standing by the Torah, they're already thinking about somebody else or something else.
A lot
else
of people
probably
in the
right.
congregation don't
right.
understand that, too.
Yeah.
Torah reading takes place over this one. Answer,
absolutely.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Phil, you know what I've seen? That
yeah.
when you're reading and it's time to open up the scroll and move it, that if the person is following, that's to me it's helpful to almost in that, but to help roll the Torah.
Right.
But I've seen one individual in Florida that I've done that, and he pushes me. But I think it's even correct to follow and help.
Yeah,
that's
definitely. I'll tell you where it is permitted to talk is doing the Misha Beres.
Well, it depends on the page.
Doing the Misha Beres is permissible if you have.
Going to the next section.
Yeah,
the
all right.
Right.
Yeah, because they are not.
They're personal then.
Yeah, you know they are not
like
the integral part of the reading of the Torah. The reading of the Torah is actually the text that we read. Okay.
It would be a good idea if somebody posted
sign there.
A list of behavior at services.
When I was a kid, we moved to the North End in 1945, and the thing that struck me, the difference between the Beth Israel and Kadima was the fact that Kadima
was
much
larger.
Remember, was that guy who sits in the
magazine?
Who we call
yeah,
father,
remember, yes.
He used to every so often pick up two or three chumashim.
Yeah.
And he would pound them on in his old Zayin
shop. I remember that. How
yeah.
can I remember that? I was only 6 years old.
All the time. When I was 10 years old, we
would. Yeah.
That struck me.
I remember that.
Yeah.
But we were sitting up. We were sitting upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
That's the from the Bima.
Florida. Immediately
bang
on the table.
No,
it's okay.
Get on time
to talk. Okay, let's get back to our text. Thank you very much. I mean, we can spend all night talking about things that we saw in the show.
All right,
let's get on to our text, okay? All right. So, as we see now, on Monday and Thursday mornings, we read the Torah. We also read the Torah Shabbos to Mincha, okay? And in any case, Korin Shlosha means originally that three different people have aliyahs, they read their text, okay? Of course, today, we would simply say that three people are called up to the reading of the Torah, right? Ain Parson Mehen, Ain Mosif Dan Mehen. You're not allowed to have less than three people called up, you're not allowed to add more than the three people who are called up, okay? And also, the Ain Maftir Menobi, on those days, we do not recite a maftir, meaning to recite a haftorah, taken from the prophets. The haftorahs all come from the prophets, but by the word prophets, I have to tell you, it includes the whole range, beginning with from Joshua, all the way through the end of the what we would call the treyos of the 12 prophets. Okay, so anything there might possibly serve as a text for a haftorah. Although, of course, I mean, we have it now that you know exactly what we have to read from Shabbos to Shabbos, except sometimes that there is a difference in custom. Okay.
But still, if you don't have a levy, sometimes you have only two people calling the Torah.
Okay, that brings us to a different problem. Okay, brings us to the problem that if the Kohen is present and he gets the Aliyah, right? We don't want to assume that there's something wrong with his yichus by calling somebody who is not a Levi or a Kohen. So in order not to presume that there's something wrong with his lineage, yeah. is the reason why the Kohen gets a double Aliyah in that particular case. Okay?
Really?
That's yeah, that's the reason.
If there's no
right.
The Kohen gets a double Aliyah? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. If there is a Kohen...
If there's a Kohen,
and no Levi, right.
And
he gets a double Aliyah, that's correct.
Israel.
Right, then you call Israel, exactly.
Does that cover the idea that no less than three, no more than three?
No, it still can only have three Aliyahs, period, that's all.
Three Aliyahs,
that's all.
It
doesn't mean three people necessarily, it means three Aliyahs. Okay.
I was in shul for Tisha B'Av and I was a Levi, but I did not completely fast, I had a drink.
Yeah.
I had to go outside because I was the only lady here. And they put the Kohen for the lady.
What if there's only
well, they were very strict with you, Saul.
So, what if there's only a lady and no Kohen?
If there is a lady and no Kohen is present, okay. For that, we have a different rule. The rule is the Sparta Chavila, which means that you don't necessarily have to call upon the Levi. You can call three Israel. Okay?
And you start?
It's a sign of respect for the Kohen that we do that.
Oh,
for the Kohen.
But
the
Kohen's a Levi.
Sure, the Kohen is a Levi, but the Kohen is still separate from a Levi. In the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen had one job, the Levi had a different job.
Yeah.
Okay? There were union rules concerning.
See, the Kohen is a lady, and I know that he came originally from the
tribe. That is correct.
But didn't say, from then on, there was a separation.
Yes. Because they had different tasks to fulfill, exactly. Right.
So
Levi was not allowed to perform any of the sacrificial, anything like that. But that was strictly the province of the Kohen.
Right.
On the other hand, the Levi was expected to be a member of the choir in the Beis HaMikdash, right? So that was not the Kohen's job, that was the Levi's job. Okay?
Warren, yes. There was no Kohanim present, would the Yisrael be regarded first?
Yeah, he could. That's what I said. He could. Yeah, right.
But the Levi is called for the first Aliyah.
Right.
That's still...
Yeah, that's perfectly okay. It means you want to honor the Levi, so you call him, you give him the first Aliyah in that particular case. But you're not required to. That's the difference.
Not essential.
If they had no Levi,
it's not required.
Right.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay, you're in tough shape.
Okay. All right. So far we have learned that we have three Aliyahs on Monday and Thursday, and also Shabbos the Mincha. Okay? Not allowed to add, not allowed to have less than that. As I said, it means less than the Aliyahs.
Right.
There have to be three Aliyahs in any case. And, okay. And more so that there is no Maftir read on these days. Okay. Now we come to something that I have to explain. Which means very simply that in those days the person who had the first Aliyah was the one who said, you know, the Baruch Hu and we call the Amim and okay. The person who had the last Aliyah, he was the one who said and so on. And if there were people in between, so they simply got up and they read. But they did not recite any brachas. That was in those days. That's how it started out. Okay? That's how it started out. So the Mishnah, of course, still reflects, you know, the situation that existed 2,000 years ago when the Mishnah was compiled. Actually, the Mishnah was compiled not later than about the year 200 of the Common Era. So, all right, so 1,800 years ago, if you wish, or something like that, okay? still a long stretch of time.
Maybe I'm asking a question out of context, but where did they get the idea of having seven aliyahs? Or eight, I'd say. Where did that
seven
come
aliyahs.
From?
Well,
with
Bhaktar,
they...
seven is sort of like a magical number. You could say that it's in order because we have 7 days in the week, and on Shabbos, therefore, we indulge in the fact that we can have seven aliyahs, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Little patience. Okay. We'll get through many of these things, okay?
All right.
So far, this is what it says. Okay. Then, Barosh Chadosh V'chulosh HaMoed and Meshchedesh or the Chalamed Koren Arba'ot. And in that case, how many aliyahs are given?
Four.
Okay? Ein posin lehen, ein masudan lehen. Again, it says, you do not read less, you do not read more. Ein matir menovin. Also, again, you don't recite a passage from the prophets. Okay? No haftar from them. Okay. And again, it says the same thing, because, as I said, this was the standard procedure in the days of the Mishnah. That haposeh ha'achosem batir b'berach l'vanel acharecha. Okay? Person who gets the first aliyah, or the person who gets the last aliyah, you know, they recite the appropriate blessings either before or after.
Oh.
Right. Zehaklal, and now they have a general rule. Zehaklal means this is the general rule. Kol sheyesh bo musaf, you know, yom tov kohen arba'a. If it is a day upon which musaf is recited, but still is not yom tov itself, you know, the major holiday day, right? Then in that case, Koren Arua. Those days we have four aliyahs. Okay? Be Yom Tov. How about Adi Yom Tov? What do you mean?
Any day when there is an addition, but it's not Yom Tov.
Hey,
in other words, that the
don't rely upon an English translation.
No, what I'm saying, when would it ever occur that you would have four aliyahs besides on Rosh Chodesh?
Yeah, but the Mishnah is telling us specifically why we have four aliyahs on those days. It's because these are days upon which we recite Musaf. That's one thing,
okay?
But at the same time, it's not the major day of the holiday.
Okay,
it's part of the holiday. Of course, there are all kinds of rules concerning how we're supposed to act on the Chol HaMoed. Okay, but nevertheless, from the point of view of what you know, let's say the holiness of let's say the first days, the last days of a Yontif, as compared to Chol HaMoed, Chol HaMoed is not quite as strict about it. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. But because it still is a yontov in the sense that most of us recite on these days, that applies to Rosh Chodesh as well, so therefore we have four of these. So as you can see, there's already a progression. Weekdays, three of these.
Right. But
yes. I'll come to that, okay? You want to hold it? Let me finish the Mishnah, then I'll answer your question, okay?
All right. That would be a contradiction right there.
No, it's not a contradiction. I'll explain what the procedure is, okay? And it's only a question of understanding the procedure, what we're talking about, okay? All right. Then it says, the Yom Tov, which means, again, is what I said, what we would call the first last day's Yom Tov, right? Chamisha. That time you have to give out five aliyahs. The Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur, how many aliyahs we have?
Six.
Shisha, we have six. The Shabbos, on Shabbos, seven. Shiva, okay, we have
seven.
Okay. And now again, here is our rule for these days. It says, Ein posin lehen, we do not call up fewer aliyahs on these days than the numbers that we just indicated, namely five, six, and seven. Right? But it says, Avol Motzifin Aleihem, you are allowed to have additional aliyahs.
Like
a Hosafos, right. We'll discover that while this is the rule in the Mishnah over here, but nevertheless, it's not the practice. Okay? I'll come to that in a second. Okay?
Right.
And it says, in the case of all these things, Amaftirim Binovi, and on these days, we do recite a Haftorah taken from the prophets. And again, the same general rule that we had before, the first guy, the last guy, right, HaBaseh HaChosem, HaTorah, the one who began the reading of the Torah, the one who completed it, Mevorech Lefonech L'Achareha. He recites the bracha before it and after. Okay. Yeah, right. We're talking about Yom Tov itself and Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Okay, now I have to tell you that our practice today is a little bit different. In that, if it's a Yom Tov day, we only have five aliyahs, plus Machter, okay? On Yom Kippur, we only have six aliyahs, plus Machter. However, on Shabbos, you see that it is permissible to add, and yet nevertheless, in many places they feel that it's not right to add because it schleps out the service longer or whatever it may be, okay? So in many places you go to David and the yeshivas, a normal rule, they will not have it. They have only seven aliyahs, and many shuls follow that practice, only think about seven aliyahs. Okay, so now, there are certain things, coming back to what you said. Let's say Rosh Chodesh is on Monday, okay? Or next week, we're going to have Rosh Chodesh on Thursday and Friday. All right. So what happens is that we follow the rule for Rosh Chodesh, because we don't read the same passage that we would have read. What are the readings? Okay. Naturally, people come to shul every day, they know what it is, okay? Shabbos, we have our parshas. We're going to be reading Re'eh this Shabbos morning, okay? Now, last Shabbos to Mincha, that the Seder was Ekev, but to Mincha we already read the first Aliyah that we have in Re'eh, okay? Monday and Thursday morning, we again repeated the same thing. Now, if Rosh Chodesh happens to occur on, let's say, Monday or Thursday, it supersedes the fact of three aliyahs. Instead, you read four aliyahs. But you're not reading Re'eh in this particular case, or next week would be not reading Shoftim. You read specifically the reading which is assigned for Rosh Chodesh, okay? Okay? And, of course, in Chol HaMoed, each day of Chol HaMoed has its own particular reading. Actually, during Pesach, we read the same thing over and over again. But for Sukkot, every day of Sukkot has its own special maftir. I mean its own special reading in the Torah, okay? Because this is what we call the musafim. One of the musafim, musafim are the additional sacrifices that were brought on Rosh Chodesh, that were brought on the holidays, right? As the Torah specified, we read a few weeks ago, Parsha Pinchas, where towards the end of the Seder, this is where we have an enumeration of these various days and what was the additional sacrifice brought in the Beis HaMikdash on those days. Okay? We even have for Shabbos. I mean, when we daven Musaf on Shabbos, what we say, Biyom HaShabbos, Shnechmosim Bnei Shana Tamimim, right? We have to sacrifice the additional sacrifice of the two lambs, which have to be perfect, right? Shneis on Imsolas, and we also have to have 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour, the Benor of Hashemen, which is mixed with fine oil, right? Benisco, as well as the libation of wine, which was poured on that occasion, and so on. And this is Ola Shabbos B'Shabbat, right? This is the burnt sacrifice B'Shabbos every single week. That's for Shabbos. Okay. But why don't we read this as a separate reading on Shabbos the way we do the, let's say, you know, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, and so on and so forth? Why don't we? So the answer is because it only has 2 psukim. And as we're going to learn, it only has 2 verses in the Torah. We do not take out a separate Sefer Torah just to read 2 sentences. Okay? All right. So that's the reason why. All right. Now, there are some days that were not covered over here. I'm thinking specifically of a fast day. Okay? On a fast day, again, we read a special reading for the fast day itself. In the morning, we just have 3 aliyahs. In the afternoon, again, we have 3 aliyahs, but the 3rd aliyah is the one who also recites the Haftorah for the mincha of a fast day. On the 9th of Av, then we have a separate Haftorah in the morning and a separate Haftorah in the afternoon, and it's the 3rd person called up who does it. But still, we adhere to the principle that if it's not Shabbos, if it's not Yontif, if it's not Rish Chodesh, or Chalamud, then in that case you only have 3 aliyahs. Okay? So this is the general rule that we learned from the Mishnah over here. All right. Now, yes.
In your time,
correct.
Are we just repeating?
Yes. Yes, yes. We're repeating the Seder that time. I mean, the reading, you know, it's also Habracha. Okay. Yeah,
just
yeah.
Trying to get in all these people.
Exactly, right.
You're not really having more than 3 aliyahs.
Right. Correct. This is why some people formulated as a rule that we're not allowed to add on Yontif or on Yom Kippur more than what we had, maybe the 5 and the 6, except, of course, by the way, if Yom Kippur or a Yontif occurs on Shabbos, then on that day we have 7 aliyahs. Okay? But with Simchas Torah, we permit additional aliyahs. Even those people who do not normally have additional aliyahs on Shabbos, but for Simchas Torah, that's okay. They read it, and they simply repeat it, that's all. Yeah, correct. You have 5 that you read straight, and then you start it over again. And so until everybody hopefully has had an aliyah. Okay.
If you have 400 people in the congregation, you get 400 aliyahs
out. That's the problem. This is why in Kadima they have a wholesale aliyah business. In some places, they'll take Sefer Torahs and go in, let's say, go into the chapel over here, go into some other room or whatever it may be, and really? Try to give individual aliyahs. Yeah. Now, this was a custom. Right.
Can we do 2 parshas on some Simchas Torah?
No.
Oh, well.
Only 1. It's also bracha.
No.
I know what you're thinking of. The fact that after we have finished what is required for the Zosa bracha, then we have what we call a chosim bereshis, and then we have a mafter. Okay. That's correct. So the custom is to have a chosim bereshis. Of course, the last person to read the last verses of the Mezuzas HaBracha, he's the Chosin Torah, okay? Then you have Chosin Bereishis, and then after that you have the Machter, okay? So that's why. Right. So you have to have then at least this, you read from three Sefer Torahs just in order to be able to accommodate this one, that one, the other one, okay? All right. These things you get primarily through observation, okay?
And through, hopefully, that there is somebody there who knows what they're doing.
Right, right, okay. Well, here in Kadiba, I think we have people.
People are well covered.
Right, okay. All right. Now, the Gemara goes back to an analysis of the Mishnah, right? And you remember that the first thing that was mentioned in the Mishnah here is about the reading of the Megillah, where it said what? That one or two people and so on can read the Megillah, correct? So now the Gemara says, Tana, so we have a teaching which says, Masha ein kein b'Torah. This rule that you can have more than one person reading simultaneously, this does not apply to the reading of the Torah. Okay. Menorah hanimile. So what source do we have for this teaching? So Rabbi Abohu said, we have a pasuk in the Torah. Whatever says Menorah hanimile, we're always looking for a verse in order to justify an opinion. Okay? So what is the pasuk that he quotes? Quotes the pasuk, the Rebbeinu Shalom says to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is at the time of the giving of the second Ten Commandments, and he says to him, Yator po amod imodi, you stand here now together with me. Okay? Which means what? Which means, the Omer Rabbahu, as he explained it, il mole mikro kosim, if it were not specifically written in the Torah, Yev Shodi Omra, it would be impossible to state something like this. Kivi Yochel, whenever we have Kivi Yochel, you have to get used to the terminology. Kivi Yochel means it is as if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, right, is behaving like a human being, so to speak, okay? Kivi Yochel. So what is it? Kivi Yochel, Afa Kodesh Baruch Hu Baal Mida. The pasuk seems to imply that even the Rebbeinu Shel Olam was standing. Because remember, it says, you stand here with me. So in other words, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is standing and he wants Moshe Rabbeinu also to stand with him. Okay? So, he's using this as a text to prove what? That you have to be standing when you read the Torah in public. That's what he wants to prove, okay? And you can might also say that the ato, what is ato? Ato is singular, means you, singular, okay? So therefore, this is how he's applying the verse. Yes.
Does it mean therefore that the congregation should stand up while the Torah is being read?
That's a different story, I'll come to that too. Okay. Well, we're being peppered with questions tonight. Hopefully I can answer them. Right. All right. The other Avol, as much as Rabbi Avol already has been cited, so we give another quotation from him. He says, Minayan the Rav, Shalo Yeshu Agabe Mito, the Yashan Talmido Agabe Karka. How do we know that it's not proper for a teacher? Rav over here means teacher, okay? For a teacher who is sitting, on a mita. Mita means literally a bed, but I mean, it could be, let's say he's sitting on a chair, he's sitting on a bed, whatever, of course in those days, let's say they had like couches or sofas or something like that. Okay, so he is seated and he's teaching his student, right, who, what is he doing? The student is sitting al gabai kapra, on the ground, he's sitting on the ground, okay? So how do we know, according to Rabbo, that this is not right for a teacher to be seated, right, while his Talmid is sitting on the floor? Okay, in other words, he's higher than him, right? Yeah, Shademar, and again, he bases it interpreting the same pasuk that we had before. V'yator po amod imodi. Now you stand together with me. In other words, if the teacher is standing, the student should be standing. If the teacher is sitting, then the student should be sitting. Okay? And if the Talmud is sitting on the ground, then the teacher too has to sit on the ground. In other words,
studying
Torah, obviously. Of course. Of course. That's what we use the word Rav in this connection. That's a teacher. Okay?
So they may be seated there's nothing wrong. They can be seated while they're studying Torah.
Correct.
But they have to be on the same level.
Well, that would be on the same level. Exactly. In order that the teacher should not, let's say, show himself prouder or something like that. All right. In reality, if a teacher stands giving a lecture, the students are permitted. But we'll see in a minute that this was a concession. This was a concession. Okay?
Thinking of the Sefer Avos, where specifically it says, and you shall sit at the feet of your teacher.
Yeah, right. Okay. So obviously, right. Represents a different point of view. Don't forget, this is Rabbi Abahu's own private point of view. Okay. But, nevertheless, it's considered a very good rule to be followed. Okay. All right. Tanu Rabbanan, our sages taught another teaching. It says, Mimos Moshe and Rabban Gamliel. From the days of Moshe Rabbeinu till the time of Rabban Gamliel, in other words, centuries have passed between the time that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah and taught it to the people of Israel at the time that Rabban Gamliel was the Nazi, and this would be roughly around, let's say, about the year 60, 70 of the Common Era, something like that. It's a long span of time. So he says, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until his days, Lo hayu lemeinu Torah el me'umad. People learned Torah only standing. Okay. Mishameis Rabbi Gamliel, but after Rabbi Gamliel passed away, then Yorat Choli Le'olam, then it's as if illness, a sickness, descended to the world. In other words, people became shvacher. Okay, they became weaker. Right. The Hoyo Lemaiden Torah Miyusha, and they learned the Torah seated. So that answers the question that was raised before. That originally people stood, but for almost the past 2,000 years, we're considered weaker specimens than our great ancestors back in the days of yore. Okay, yes. That's correct. Somebody. Yes, it's sort of considered respect for the Torah. The truth of the matter is that this is something that we find primarily in yeshivas when they read the Torah at the services, and so yeshiva light.
They teach them that way.
Right, they're taught that way. It's imbued in them, and so therefore, it's considered the correct procedure that during the time that the actual text of the Torah is read, that they stand. During the Misha Beirach, they can sit. Okay. Yeah, it's obviously the same idea.
Are they appear to be davening, or are they going to saying the Torah? I mean, chanting the Torah? They appear to be davening usually when they're doing that.
No, they shouldn't. They're supposed to be following the reading. They're supposed to be following the reading of the Torah.
Okay.
Well, you have a chumash in front of you, and you follow the reading. This is how. They should not repeat it. No. The only person who repeats is, I told you, and the non-detone, this person actually has the aliyah. Yeah, but not the people who see it. However, since we raised this, so I have to tell you that there's a good old-fashioned practice that every week a person should review the Torah twice. We call it Shnayim Mikra, and then the Echad Targum, and review then the translation of the Torah text once. So, if you adhere to this rule, then by the time Shabbos comes, you will have had a chance, to review it twice, the Torah text, okay? So, you know, many people, if they have time, they do, let's say, a little portion every day in the week until they reach Shabbos, okay? Others, they're too busy, too hurried, whatever it may be, so Friday night they'll go over the center. And then, of course, you hear it again in the morning, and you follow with your eyes, right, the text that is being read. So you have to follow it with your eyes and with your ears, okay? So that's the way you can fulfill at least the Shnayim Mikra. Now, as far as the Echad Targum is concerned, some people actually do study the Targum text, so there's the Aramaic translation, every week. And frankly, I think it's a good practice from the point of view that at least become more familiar with the Aramaic language and recognize what are some of the roots of that language which differ from Hebrew, or of course many of them, you know, resemble, because it's like a cousin language to Hebrew, okay? And also, the Targum at times has a tendency not just to translate, but also has a tendency to interpret as well, okay? So, naturally, if you can't follow it too well, you don't understand what it says, then there are other substitutions. Study Rashi during the week, okay? Study a good English translation or something like that, so that at least you know what the text is all about. So that's important. All right. To continue. All right. So that we see then that after the death of Rabbi Gamliel, people became weaker, and therefore when they learned Torah, they were seated when they were learning. V'hainu nitnan, and this explains the Mishnah that we learned, namely, Mishameis Rabbi Gamliel, actually we learned it towards the end of Sota. After Rabbi Gamliel passed away, Botil Kvot Torah, the honor given to the Torah was sort of, it disappeared, or something like that, nullified, whatever you want to say. Okay? Then, there's a little bit of a contradiction, because it says, Kosev Echod Eimer, one pasuk in the Torah tells us, Bo'eshe Bohar, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I sat on the mountain, right? That's what it says. If you translate the word Bo'eshev is, and I sat, okay? And then what do we find? The Kosev Echod Eimer, right? In another pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'anochi Omarati Bohar, I stood on the mountain. So how do you reconcile the fact that first he says I sat, and then he says I stood? So Amar Rav, so Rav said, I made the Laymeid, Yoshev Hashem, which means, when he was learning Torah from the Rabbeinu Shalalam, he stood. But when he wanted to review what he had, review his learning, then he sat in order to review it for himself. Okay? Rabbi Chanina has a different explanation. Rabbi Chanina Amar says, Lo Oimeid, Velo Yeshev. No, he neither stood nor he sat, Elo Shochev, but rather, in the presence of Rabbeinu Shalom, he was bent over. Bent over means partly sitting, so to speak, and partly standing. Okay. So that was Rabbi Chanina's interpretation. Rabbi Yochanan, he gave a different one. He says, Omar, Ein Yeshiva El Shenakov. He says, no, you know, the word yeshiva doesn't mean sitting in this particular case, but rather it means that I remain. What Moshe Rabbeinu says is, V'eshev Ahor Boim Yom, it means that I remained on the mountain 40 days, 40 days, 40 nights, right? So that's what it means. It doesn't mean that I sat on the mountain all that time. Okay. Shenemar, and he brings another pasuk to show that the word Yoshev can have a different meaning other than simply the idea of sitting. Okay? Shenemar, he brings a pasuk, Shvateshu Bekodesh Yomim Rabin. It's written that Vateshu, you were engaged in this activity in the city of Kodesh for many, many days. This is when they were reaching the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and they stood in Kodesh, which was like an oasis, you know, on the way, right near the, before they came to the Eber HaYarden, you know, to the other side of the Jordan, and from there, eventually they crossed over into the western part of Eretz Israel, okay? So obviously, Vateshev Bekodesh doesn't mean literally that you sat in Kadesh many days, but you stayed there. Okay, that's what it says. Rava Omar, Rava gave a different explanation about the difference between sitting and standing. He says, Rakos Me'umad, the Koshes Me'yushav. When Moshe Rabbeinu had something easy to learn, he could stand. But when he has something tough to learn, then in that particular case, he had to sit. Okay. All right. Have a little time yet to go a little bit further. Okay. Then, now we come to the other thing that we had concerned to read in Megillah, namely, Kira'a Echad, Kira'uhu Shnayim, Yotzu, right? Question was, if one person or even if two people read it simultaneously, nevertheless we say that what? That the congregation or the people who are listening to the reading of the Megillah are able to fulfill the obligation of hearing the Megillah. All right. Now we turn over the page to Chof Aleph Beis. And here is a page for those who need it. Well, this is Omer Aleph. Well, it goes by Omer Beis. Yeah.
If somebody loses right. voice in the middle of the Megillah,
somebody is permitted to come and to do it. No, nothing. Something where you left off. Right. Yeah. Hey, we don't want to make it tough for everybody. It's not like reading in the Torah where you discover a mistake in the text. With the Megillah, we're a little bit more liberal, so to speak. Okay? You have to have, you know, we have a principle. Sometimes it's nice if people will remember that principle that we call. Torah Tzibur. What is Torah Tzibur? It means we shouldn't put a burden on the congregation by schlepping out too long and things like that.
Well,
so, right.
Sermon and so on.
Well, if you give a sermon, stick to the point, okay? Don't try to cover everything off it.
Luncheon is.
But the same could apply to Chazonim who repeat 2, 3, 4 times the same words and so on and so forth, okay?
I understand the practice in Germany is that the German Jews, if you repeat a word, they chase you off your email.
Well, I know if they do that, but the fact of the matter is, I remember when I used to be the chazan of the seminary, okay, for the high holidays, very often during the year as well. So the first time, you know, that I davened on the high holidays over there, Rosh Hashanah, so they said, remember, that how many times are the words written in the sinner in the Boston, right? It's only written once. That's all.
Many times you fail. You don't gargle.
Was that to get out earlier or something?
Well, yeah, obviously, you will get out a little bit earlier. Certainly on Rosh Hashanah you will, okay? And even on Yom Kippur, maybe you have a longer break. But, you know, the seminary, by the way, there was no such thing as a break. They added additional piyutim that you don't find in the average one in order to make sure that the entire day was spent simply in prayer. So,
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur.
Right. No such thing as a break in between. It's a very fine practice, but I don't have to tell you. In those days, I was a younger man. Okay. Right.
Okay.
Pardon me?
Seminary.
Well, I was at the seminary as a student. Okay, yeah. Yes, but in those days it was a much more traditional place than what the rabbis today are. Okay. So, yeah, we're on Tana. First word is Tana. Turn the page. No, you didn't.
No, you
in art school, it's a funny arrangement that they have. They repeat the text over and over again.
So
right, this
times.
Is where we are now. Yeah. The first time I saw an art school, Gemara, I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I'll be honest with you. Finally, I got the hang of what they're trying to do over it. All right.
It says Tana.
Right. So it says Tana. Tana means, you know, and we have a teaching which says, Masha ain kein batora, right? In other words, the fact that reading, you know, have more than one reading, more than one reader reading the text of the Torah is not allowed. It's not this way in the Torah. So, Tana Rabbanan, and they have another teaching, another quotation. This particular case, it happens to be from the Tosefta. Previous one happened to be from Rosh Hashanah. But here is the Tosefta. Tosefta says, "Batorah echad korei v'echad betarkin." When it comes to reading the Torah, one person reads the text of the Torah and one person translates it into Targum Lashon. Okay. Now, we have to realize this was the practice in Babylonian Eretz Yisrael back in olden days when people were not altogether familiar with the Hebrew language. So in order to make the words of the Torah intelligible to them, what they did was that, for example, a person would read Bereishis Bara Elokim Hashamayim V'Ha'aretz, and then the Meturgamon, the translator, would say the same verse in Aramaic. Then they would read the next verse, okay? And then that would be translated into Aramaic and so on. You can see from this, needless to say, that the reading of the Torah could go on for a long and long time. But in all probability, they did not read as much at one session as we read today.
You know, on Shabbos.
On Shabbos, right. Really? Yeah, yeah. This is, I'm talking about, you know, how many years ago? Yeah, I'm talking about, let's say, 1600 years ago or something like that. Obviously, things have changed. Huh? Let me explain triennial. Okay.
I was thinking about this.
Yeah, in Eretz Yisrael, they had triennial. But what does triennial mean as far as Eretz Yisrael is concerned? It meant that, for example, let's say you read chapters 1 and 2 in Bereishis, okay? Next Shabbos, you continue with 3 and 4. The next Shabbos, you continue with 5, 6, and 7, or whatever it may be. You understand? It is not this hocus-pocus that you have in the conservative, where they now read triennial, meaning that they're reading the same Sedra that we read, only they chop it up. And they only read a few psukim, the next week they read a few psukim, and so on. Like what we do on Monday and Thursday, this is what they're doing over there.
Next year they read another.
Supposedly, yeah. I say supposedly.
According to the system you're describing now,
yeah,
they read, let's say, chapters 1 and 2. Okay?
Right, right.
But they gave seven aliyahs.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That was the rule, that you had to have seven aliyahs.
So they read Bereishis and they read the Noah.
Right, yeah. Because the division into the centers that we're more familiar with came in a somewhat later time than this, okay? Yeah.
So under the system
yes.
they had in antiquity, they might only get to like Vayikra 1 year and then do Vayikra the next year as well?
Yeah, essentially that's what might have happened,
it
right?
Okay. I wouldn't wind up with Simchas Torah then.
No, Simchas Torah actually was a later holiday.
Yeah.
It was a later holiday. But to realize Simchas Torah is really the second day of Shmini Atzeres.
Right.
But they wanted to give it a special significance, and so this is why the custom arose during the Middle Ages of having Simchas Torah. Okay. Of course, you know, in Eretz Yisrael they have a different problem. In Eretz Yisrael, you have a problem that, with the exception of Rosh Hashanah, none of the holidays are 2-day holidays.
Yeah.
So, in that particular case, what do you do, for example, on Shmini Atzeres? So the answer is, they do prayers for Shmini Atzeres, including, for example, that they bench Geshem, right? But the reading of the Torah is not what we read, but in a sense, going to use us HaBrocha.
Use
us HaBrocha, right, yeah. So they have their own traditions.
They
what they do over there.
Don't
say Yisko the same day. You know, all these things that we do over a 2-day period, they do in 1 day. Okay. Huh. Yeah. All right. But as I said, the triennial cycle, that used to be followed in certain countries. Not followed everywhere back in those days. Our custom is supposed to be the Babylonian custom, that the Babylonian Jews decided that they wanted to read the entire Torah during the course of 1 year. Okay, but in those places where it was done, so as I said, it meant that you continued reading the following week where you left off the previous week. Right. Yeah. So that's why it took 3 years to go through it. And particularly if you have a Meturgamon, every Pasuk is being translated, actually it takes longer. Okay.
So is this a brand new practice where, where they read one third of the Parsha every year?
Somebody invented. I'll tell you, the first people to invent this custom happened to be the Reformed Jews. So I hate to say it, but the conservatives very often the Tanzanok, whatever the Reform are doing, so they're doing the same thing.
Do my children start
believing? Yeah, that they do.
Right.
Law and standards and so on. But by the same token, you have to know. And the final analysis, the same committee on law and standards says, nevertheless, each individual rabbi is the law and the standard in his own congregation. No. Yeah. Okay, we'll go a couple of more minutes and we'll call it a night. Okay. All right. So it says in the Torah, one person reads and one person gives the target, gives the Aramaic translation. Or vilvad, and on condition shaloyehe echot korish daim targumin, you're not allowed to have one person read the Torah, but two people give the translation. Okay, that's liable to be confusing already. Uvenovi, but when they're reading from the prophet, echot kore, one reads the text again, ushnai metargumim. There, it's okay to have two. Uvilvad, but remember that, shelo yehu shnayim korin ushnai metargumim. You're never allowed to have two people reading simultaneously from the Torah and two people who are giving the translation. All right? And now look what happens over here. Over Hallel, over Megillah. But when it comes to the recital of the Hallel or to the recital of the Megillah's Esther, Afilo Asorah Korin Vasorah Targumin. You could have even 10 people reading simultaneously and 10 people who are translating it. My Tama. So, what kind of a reason do you give me for this? It says, Kevin the Chaviva, inasmuch as people love to hear it. So Yahweh the Taihu Vishami. So they'll pay attention and they'll hear. Alright. Now one way out of this problem is to say that you select the person whom you're going to listen to and stick to that particular person. So if you stick to this one, and the other guy sticks to someone else and somebody says the third, so then you can have simultaneously. But I would not recommend it. perhaps it was that point of view, right? It's more confusing than anything else, right? It's a similar discussion, by the way, just to conclude. Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about blowing the shofar.
Oh yeah.
Same thing. Are you allowed to have two guys blowing at the same time? The answer is technically yes. But
why they
not recommended.
Simultaneously.
Right, yeah, simultaneously. But not recommended.
What is it talking about, blowing the chopra?
you don't have the original ones, your own.
Okay, tonight is the
7th.
The 8th already or the 7th?
7th.
7th. Can't remember anymore. Okay, tonight is the 7th day of August, and tonight already is the beginning of the 30th day of the month of Av, in other words, first day of Rosh Chodesh Elul. And we can feel Rosh Hashanah is beginning to approach. And as the next couple of weeks go by, it will be galloping towards us. Okay.
Start blowing your shofar?
Friday morning we start.
Friday morning?
Yeah, Friday morning. And we also begin saying the Novan Ori at that time. Yeah.
Friday morning.
Friday morning, right. Okay. So, the Mishnah had said as follows, Malkim Shenahogu Dvorech Yevorech. In reference to the reading of the Megillah, it said that where it is the custom that people recite a bracha for the reading of the Megillah, they recite a bracha, right? And where the custom is not to recite a bracha, then of course the implication is not to recite a bracha. Now, Omar Abaye, so Abaye said, hold on, he says, Lo shonu elala achareha, avol nefoneho mitzvah dvorech. He says, where we have this tradition in the Mishnah, they're talking only about whether we should recite a bracha after the reading of the Megillah. But as far as before, whether we should recite a brachas before, on the contrary, it's a mitzvah to recite the blessing over the Megillah. Domar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, as Rav Yehuda said, the name is Shmuel, and here he gives a general rule. What is the general rule? It says, "Kol hamitzvos kulon mevorech aleihen uvalatziyoson." Okay. Something of that candy went down the wrong way. Okay. Yeah. It's all right. I thought it would help my throat.
Get a traffic ticket.
As you can see, sometimes you can't foresee all these
you
things.
Can't talk and
right.
Two candy at the same time.
Okay. But this rule is as follows. Okay. Was promulgated by Shmuel and cited by those. It says, whenever we have a mitzvah for which we have to make a bracha, then you have to make the bracha just prior to the performance of that particular mitzvah. In other words, when a woman lights candles, right, and she says, Asher Gershom Nisvei Sovetzivon El Hadik Ne'er Shel Shabbos, that's an exception. Because
already
it would be a meeting, right? So that's what she has before. But on the other hand, with Hanukkah, when we say Asher Gershom Sovetzivon El Hadik Ne'er Shel Hanukkah, then we light after that, although actually we recite first all two or three blessings that follow, and then we do the lighting. But the point is, it follows the recital of the bracha. The same thing for lulav, the same thing, for any bracha which we begin our sharing shabbat tzivanu, we praise God who sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to do whatever the specific mitzvah is. Okay? Jerry?
What about washing of the hands?
Sharing some other tilas yadayim, correct? There
but
are some.
That,
okay. There are some who say that you should wash your hands immediately after make the bracha. This is Rabbi Sayyidi's opinion. However, the custom that we normally follow is that while we're washing, and particularly when we're drying our hands, at that particular point, while the hands are still wet, this is when we make that particular bracha. Jerry?
No, you make, before you eat, you make a motion.
Correct. But
okay,
that's not sanctification.
After you eat, you do bracha from the show.
Correct,
right.
But that, it's not a bracha, excuse me, it is not a bracha.
Okay, now what?
Where it says, Asher Kedisham Mitzvah Tzibanu. These are the brachas of the mitzvahs. Okay? Whereas the others are brachas that we cite for foods that were eating before or after, right?
Can a person benefit
exactly.
Then?
Right. Yeah.
Or on the subject of the hands, isn't there a certain ritual for that?
The ritual is, okay, the minimum is to pour it on both hands. And it has to be from a kli. In other words, it has to be from a vessel. You can't simply stick your hands underneath the faucet and be yoitzer with that, okay? You have to have a container of some sort and pour it over each hand. This is the minimum. There are those who do it twice on each hand, three times on each hand. There are some who do it first. They'll take it in the right hand, pour it over the left hand. Then they'll take it in the left hand and pour it over the right hand, and so on and so forth. I mean, you have different customs that have arisen as to the manner of performing it. Okay?
Do we have a minhag or nothing?
Well,
whatever.
It's a din, it's a minhag, that's a combination. Okay? That's why I say. The Gemara stresses, I mean, the idea that you should wash both, you know, this part and also over here. So that's why we pour it in such a way that both sides will be. Or what I do, first I do it on this side, then I do it on this side. Okay, so I do it twice.
So what are the Levi supposed to know for the Kohana?
Well, main thing is at least once on each hand. That's
and
all. That's all. As I said, this would be the minimum requirement.
Twice.
Yeah. You want to do it twice? Because you know, as we say in French, "Svemol is starker." You know, it's Svemol is best. Svemol
is good.
But the minimum is anyway. It's one funny
shot. Evil Gilu told Mishnah Minayach, right?
Right, right. Okay. All right. So, general principle, we said, kol ha-mitzvah is kulon mevorech aleihem evel etziyoson, right? Which means that all the mitzvahs, in all of them, you have to recite the bracha first, prior to the actual action of what it is that you're doing. Okay. As we pointed out, there are some exceptions, but nevertheless, it's the general rule. Okay. So now, the Gemara, however, is puzzled about this word over. What does over mean? Well, it has different translations depending upon what the context is, okay?
Does it mean past?
Yeah, normally it means past, exactly. Exactly
past.
What it means. Past, P-A-S-S, past.
Oh, past.
Right. So that's the normal meaning of the word over. So, in other words, if we were to translate this, let's say, like as literally as we possibly can, what we're saying is that when you make the bracha, you have to be passing over to the fulfillment of it, okay? But they are a little puzzled by the language, so they say, my mashma, ha'yov elishnan dekdunihu, how do we derive the fact that this word over, over here, is a language which implies preceding something, right? So they look for passages that might imply this. So Omar Rav Nachum by Yitzchak, Omar Krob. So Rav Yitzchak, Nachum by Yitzchak said, we have a pasuk. What is the pasuk? Happens to be a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, and it's written over there in connection with one of the followers of King David. It says, Vayoretz Achimatz Derech Hakikor, Vayavoretz Hakushi. Literally, it means that Achimatz ran through the plain, ran on the road which led through the plain, and Vayavor is Hakushi. Now, to me, Vayavor is Hakushi means plain and prosha that he passed by the Kushi. In other words, he passed them. He ran faster than the other guys. Okay.
The Kushi is an Ethiopian.
Kushi is an Ethiopian, right? Right. So I guess you know the Kushi was a good long distance runner. But Achimatz apparently was better than him. Okay,
even
I mean today
race.
They right. Today I mean they're always winning all the marathons. So, at any rate, so according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, what is the word Vayavar Hakushi? It means that he got there ahead of the Kushi. You understand? So in other words, he got there prior to the Kushi. All right. Abaye Omar Mehocha. Abaye has a different pasuk. It says, when we read about Yaakov Avinu, if you remember, he divided his wives, his children, into two different camps, okay? In order to make sure that if Esau should attack one group, the other one at least would be safe, okay? And then it's written, V'hu aval lefneihem, right? And he literally passed before them. In other words, what did Yaakov do?
He preceded them.
He went before them. Okay.
But isn't Yahweh also you cross the river, go across the
yeah,
river?
Yeah, 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 of course.
He was
absolutely.
He
passed
yeah.
from one side to the other.
Right, passed from one to the other, exactly. And therefore, we have the word Ma'abar, which means a
crossing,
crossing and so on. Right. okay. You also have the word Avera.